Hello, everybody. This is Neil Ewers from Ravenswood Productions in Madison, Wisconsin. This podcast is on the Olympus LS7 recorder, which, by the way, is not the recorder I'm using at the moment. The reason is I wanted you to hear what I think are some of the best microphones Olympus has ever used in a recorder, this being the DM4, and then we switch to the LS7 to see what we think of the comparison. So, without any further ado, since we're not going to do a podcast on the DM4, we've already done that, we switch now to the Olympus LS7 recorder. And that is exactly what I've done. This is the LS7 recorder. I have it set up in much the same way as I have the DM4. The DM4 doesn't have a middle omnidirectional microphone, so I'm not currently using it on this. But let's turn it on now and see what that does to the sound. The central omnidirectional microphone is now on, and as I recall, the signal put on the recording is actually higher, so I'm going to equalize these so that they will sound the same in volume, so that you can tell the difference between the two microphone settings. I'm recording on auto gain, was doing that on both recorders, and I'm recording on low mic attenuation. I always do. I find that when you record on mid mic, things distort very easily, and sometimes the limiter doesn't have the power to deal with it. So I record on low mic attenuation. I'm going to normalize these, but what I was about to say is that one of the things you will find is that the LM7 is lower on its auto gain than the DM4, making it even less likely that you're going to distort. All right, enough of the cursory individual what does it sound like. Let's talk about what it looks like and some of the features. First, I'll turn the mid microphone off, and we'll continue. I'm guessing some of you who have the recorder want to get started right away, so let me give you the information you might need to know first. First of all, how do you insert the batteries? If you hold the recorder so that the face is pointing up, the buttons are pointing up, and you feel down to the bottom of the recorder, there is the USB connector. Right below that is a little fingernail slot you can put your fingernail in. And you pull down toward the bottom, or actually the back side of the recorder. So you pull straight, if you're holding the recorder, as I said, you pull straight down. And what happens is the battery door unlatches and actually pops up toward the top of the recorder, revealing the batteries. The batteries go in so that the positive point of the left battery is sticking out toward you, and the positive point of the right battery is sticking into the recorder with the negative side or flat side toward you. You simply pull the battery door down, latch it, and you're ready to go. When I first powered on my recorder, it came up speaking. It didn't even give me the option of whether or not you wanted to have the spoken dialogues. The clock wasn't set, but I didn't get any message that said, please set the clock. But it wasn't a problem just to start recording and playing back right away. By the way, the on-off switch is on the left-hand side of the recorder, near the bottom. It's a little long switch, or slider button. If you slide it down and hold it for a second or so and release it, the recorder will power on. It might take a little bit longer the first time than it will normally take, but it will come on if you have the batteries in correctly. Push up on that button, and it will lock the buttons so that no press of them will cause them to act. To turn off the recorder, slide the button down, hold it for a second or so, and release it, and the recorder will turn off. And in both instances, you get a sound. There's a different sound for when the recorder comes on than there is when it turns off. I'll talk more about this later, but Olympus has some zoom mic possibilities. Unlike the Zoom and the Sony recorders, which have mics that actually physically move, the Olympus has decided to do this electronically. They have come up with an ability to make the mics sound like they're moving, even though they aren't. One of the things that you can do is to, therefore, narrow or widen the stereo spread. You can turn zoom off and just have regular 90-degree mics with or without the central microphone. What I've done is turn zoom on and go one past the middle so that I am spread out a little bit wider from right to left than would normally be the case, which I find matches the sound of the DM4 more specifically. All right, enough of that. Description. The recorder records in three different formats, PCM WAV, MP3, and WMA. 4 gigabytes of built-in memory, and it will take a micro SD card up to 32 gigabytes. 2 AAA either nickel-metal hydride rechargeable batteries or alkaline batteries. Its size is 4.4 inches long, 1.5 inches wide, and 0.6 inches thick. The top of the recorder has 3 microphones. 2 of them are pointing out of the recorder on the top corners of the recorder, each mic pointing out at 45 degrees, giving you a combination of 90 degrees. They're cylindrical microphones. The top of the cylinder protrudes out of the top of the recorder where the buttons are located and where the front face is located. But the end of the microphones point toward the top. So if you're holding the recorder with the end of the recorder pointing toward you, you're facing the microphones, one on the right and one on the left. The flat part in the middle with some holes in it is where the omnidirectional microphone is. So if we move down the right-hand side of the recorder, there is the jack for the external microphone, and there is a place in the menu where you can turn plug-in power on or off, and if it's off, it saves batteries. If it's on, it allows you to use plug-in power mics. Further down on the right-hand side is the micro SD card slot. I like the way they've done this in that it's very secure, except one does need a fingernail. If one holds the recorder so that the button side of the front side of the recorder is up, and you stick your fingernail in a little slot at the top part of the little square door that you can feel and pull down, it opens from the top to a down position and is now horizontal to the unit itself. The card orientation is as follows. Again, if you have the recorder lying on a surface with the buttons pointing up and the door is open, the lip on the card faces up toward the top or buttons of the recorder. It slips in. You have to be pretty careful because it's a pretty thin card, and it's spring-loaded. You press it in, and there's a little bit of tension. You go beyond that because there's a spring that you're pressing against, and it locks into place. When you remove it, you press in on it, it clicks, and it doesn't pop all the way out, but it pops out enough that you can put your fingers around it and pull it out. When you've put the card in, you flip the door back closed, and it clicks into place and stays there quite nicely. The only other thing on the right-hand side of the recorder is the strap, is the hole for the strap. Left-hand side of the recorder, starting at the top, is the headphone jack. Underneath it is the jack for the remote control, which doesn't come with the unit. And below that, and almost at the bottom of the recorder on the left-hand side as you face the front, is the on-off switch and the lock switch, all in one. When you put your finger against it and pull down on it, your finger causes it to move. Pulling down on it, holding it, turns on the recorder, turns off the recorder. Pushing up on it, locks the recorder into a position so that when you're using it, you won't accidentally press buttons. Well, I just discovered something interesting. I was fumbling around with a battery door so I can tell you how to use it, and I opened it by accident and the batteries fell out. What happened to the recording? My goodness, it just ended, just like if I'd pressed the stop button. Battery door and the USB connector is on the bottom of the unit, and since we've already dealt with the battery door, no need to go into that again. On the back of the recorder toward the top is the speaker, and right below that is a threaded camera mount. It's not the same size threads as would go on a microphone stand, but there are several ways to connect a microphone stand to this. I won't go into them here, but I have several options if people want to contact me. And those are the only 2 things on the back of the recorder. On the front of the recorder, at the very top, as I said, you have the microphones. Below the microphones, actually on the front of the recorder, is the display. It's a very nice wide display. Below that, there are three thin buttons with not a lot of room between them. They run the whole left to right width of the unit. The left and right ones are F1 and F2 buttons, and they have various functions. You can't change them as you could on the DM4 and I believe also on the DM520. They do a number of things, and I won't go into all of them here. What I'm trying to do is to get a manual that makes more sense than the one that comes with it, that covers all of the items, or at least do a menu chart for you. But for example, the function button number 1 on the left is used in playback to set your start and end points if you want to repeat some part of music over and over. The right function button takes you out of menus, no matter where you are in the menu, and saves what you have done in the menus. So if you're a couple levels deep, rather than left arrowing all the way back out of the menus, you press the function 2 button on the right, and you're taken out of menus, back to where you can record or play a file. The middle button is two things. Press it once, you get into menu. Press and hold it, and you get into record scene or playback scene, which is where you can actually set up different ways of playback, with or without reverb, etc. Set up different recordings of different microphone widths, bass rolled off, bass center microphone on, center omnidirectional microphone on, etc. You have three user choices you can set, and holding in the menu button allows you to do that. A further note of explanation about record and playback scenes. When you get into this menu, you have user 1, user 2, user 3, and save. So, for example, let's say you wanted to set up a preset, and you have everything finalized the way you want it. You hold the middle button down, you go into scenes, and you press save. Then you're given the option, or you arrow down to user 1, user 2, and user 3, and decide which of those you want to save it as. When you're on the user 1, user 2, user 3, or whatever you want, you press enter, and it saves that preset. Now, when you go in to recall a preset, you don't do save, obviously. You simply hold down the menu button, go into the preset menu, select user 1, user 2, or user 3, and you have just changed to that particular setup that you had. Now, there's one very odd thing about the way they've done presets here. On the DM4, the DM520, etc., when you set up a preset, it didn't override other things, i.e., if you set up a preset and then you wanted to change the zoom, you could go in and do that. On this recorder, for some reason, when you set up a preset, and let's say later you wanted to change your zoom ratio without going into presets, you go to zoom and it says, please turn off presets. So evidently you're kind of locked into place with these presets until you actually go into the preset menu and choose the item that I obviously forgot, and that is preset off. Now you're able to change all the particular measurements like zoom, bass roll off, etc. once again. The other thing I forgot to say about the preset menu is that when you first go into presets, you have a choice of record presets or playback presets. And it's clicking on either one of these that gets you into the user 1, 2, or 3, and save and off items. Below the three buttons are the stop button on the left and the record button on the right. They're both roundish buttons that press, and you can certainly tell they've been pressed. They have an interesting little click that's not too loud, but they're not squishy. Stop is on the left, record is on the right. Unlike a lot of the older Olympus recorders, when you press record here, you go into record standby. You're not automatically recording. This allows you to make sure you've got things set up right if you're listening in headphones. There's also another feature this recorder has, and that is pre-record. If you are in record standby and you hear a bird sing and you think, oh gosh, I wish I had pressed record, well, you press record. And what it does is start recording 2 seconds before you actually press the button. Because it has that sound in its buffer, it simply uses it. if you're in record standby and you have pre-record set, you press record again, you start recording, it doesn't beep. You just press the button. If you then press record again, you're in pause. It beeps twice to let you know that. If you start recording again, you press the record button again, and it beeps once to let you know that you're now recording. So there's a different sound between pause and record. If you don't have pre-record engaged, you still go into record standby, but when you go into record, now, when you press the record a second time, it does beep, just like it always has when you press record. And I think the reason it doesn't do this on pre-record is that it doesn't want to pick up the beep in the recording, because you're already recording when you press the button if you're in pre-record. Clear as mud? I hope not. Below those buttons is the round circle with the button in the middle. The right and left are forward and back arrows. The up and down are up and down arrows. And the center button is play and select. It is not a stop button, though, as it is on lots of other recorders of Olympus. You actually have to press the stop button on the left of those two buttons I talked about in order to stop the recording. Pressing the inner button again while playing does something else. Actually, it affects the speed. You can press while you're playing the OK button or the center button, then up and down arrow three or four times, listen to the speed change, and then press OK again to accept that speed. Other recorders let you stop play while you're adjusting speed, so that when you arrow up and down, when you come to the default speed, it beeps. You can't do that here. So the only way I know of to know that you're back at the default speed is to go all the way down to the bottom and go up 5, because you are at 0.5 at the bottom and the default speed is 1. So if you go all the way down to the bottom, go up 5 clicks with the up arrow and press enter, you are at the default playback speed. Below the round circle with the button in the middle are two buttons, one on either side. The left-hand, once again, kind of roundish button is the erase button. It works just like it does on almost every Olympus recorder I've had. Press it, arrow up to either erase file or erase all files. Press it to say yes. Arrow up again to make sure that you really are sure. Press it again, and you've either deleted one file or all files. There is an interesting erase feature this recorder has, and that is you can erase in a file from the point at which you are to another point, or to the end of the file. So if you're playing a file, while it's playing, not when it's stopped, but while it's playing, if you press the erase button, and you then either play to the point where you want to put the, say, end marker, and press the erase button again, you have then marked the beginning and end of the portion of the file you want to erase. Pressing the erase button a third time actually completes the process. The other thing you can do, for example, if you wanted to delete from where you are to the end of the file, would be to press the erase button, press the right arrow once to get to the end of the file, press the erase button again to put the end marker on, press it a third time to erase, and now you've just erased from where you were all the way to the end of the file. On the right below the circle is the list button. Pressing this button once puts you in a folder list, and you can arrow from folders A through E. Pressing it again allows you to arrow between two things. One, the music folder, which is a separate folder in which you can place MP3 files or other files you can't record in that folder. When you have pressed the button twice, and one of the options is music folder, the other option is recorder. And the recorder is the main menu under which all the folders live. So if you get to recorder and you press the enter button or play button, you get, again, your list of folders, A through E, and you can press enter on whichever one you want to be in. And now we come to menus, and the question is what to do about them. There are enough of them here that if I added them to this podcast, it would be even longer, and you'd have to find them in the podcast. And if you wanted a quick reference to them, well, where would you find them? How easily would it be? I toyed with the idea of making a separate podcast with just the menus, or of doing a document that listed the menus and their submenus. That seemed a bit unnecessary in a way because they're all spoken anyway. Yes, for somebody who's wanting to buy the recorder, it would be nice to know what it does. If you own the recorder, you can simply arrow through the menus and find out. It would be helpful to know certain things about what a particular menu item means, I understand that, but I'm not exactly sure how to go about doing this in a way that works for the most people. So if you have any ideas, let me know. Send me an email, neal@ravenswood.org, and we'll see what we can come up with. So what I want to do now is to play with these internal microphones and talk about the Zoom feature and how you can actually get the microphones to sound differently and pick up different stereo spectrums. Let me tell you how they've done this. One of the options is Zoom Off, and I believe that's how it comes. If you arrow up from Zoom Off, you have, I think, maybe six, I don't remember how many settings, that are Zoom 1, Zoom 2, Zoom 3, Zoom 4, Zoom 5. And it actually gives you a visual representation on the screen of what you're doing, because the further up you go, the narrower the spectrum gets. It's still stereo, even at the top. Even at the highest Zoom number, you're still in stereo, but the spectrum has really shrunk. Now, if you arrow back down to Zoom and go below Zoom, you have three more settings: Wide 1, Wide 2, and Wide 3. Now you start going much wider than 90 degrees, which is Zoom Off, or which is what the default is. We're on Wide 1 now, and I can go around to right and left and whatever, but I'm going to play some music through these and let you hear them. Then you get to Wide 2, and you get to Wide 3, which is really wide. So I'm only going to deal with the wider end at this point. The narrower end you can play with when you get the recorder, or imagine it as just being a narrower stereo spectrum. I'm going to play some music, something on the Tyros 4, put the recorder in between the speakers, and start with Zoom Off, which is 90 degrees, then go to Wide 1, which is a little wider, Wide 2, which is yet a little wider, and Wide 3, which is quite wide. Let's see what it sounds like. One note about what you just heard, I did not have the omnidirectional microphone on, so there was not as much bass as there could have been. One of the things I found is that placing an omnidirectional microphone between two stereo cardioid microphones that are so close together really does play with the stereo spectrum. It makes it less wide. And since I wanted to show the zoom effect, I didn't really want to use that microphone. And as I listen back to it, you really can't tell much about the zoom effect here in this recording. Much better to do it in a broader spectrum of stereo sound. But the omnidirectional microphone is there, if one wants to use it, and it does give the recording much more bass. One can record in mono with this, which is what I'm doing now, although it's going to show up on your podcast as a stereo file because all the rest of it's in stereo and I can't mix stereo and mono. I don't have the bass microphone on. Let's turn it on in mono and see what that sounds like. See if it increases the noise or the level any. The omnidirectional microphone is on. Omnidirectional microphones tend to have more bass associated with them. They actually tend to be quieter mics, which is why the Eddyroll R09HR is a quieter recorder in terms of mic preamps, because they use omnidirectional mics. That's why I wish it were possible to use the omnidirectional mic by itself. But alas, it's not. All right, let's turn off the omnidirectional mic and stay in mono for a little bit. That's what I have done. And you miss hearing something I failed to mention before. I have a dehumidifier on downstairs with a very low bass frequency. Theoretically, that got picked up more with the omnidirectional microphone on. Well, what can we do now to play with external microphones? Now, this is interesting. This is the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone, which I've used on about every podcast I've come up with. Let me go into a quieter room. I changed the microphone input to a higher level. I'm on middle mic attenuation now. And let's listen to noise. Wandering through the house, I suppose I could go outside and see, put this in my pocket, see what the temperature is. That's the nice thing about this recorder. It's small enough, and I'm still using the AT-822. I like the spread of this microphone, too. It is a 110-degree two-capsule setup, which makes it a little more widespread than a 90-degree setup. And this is a Radio Shack headphone-microphone combination. I've had it for a long time, so I don't think you can buy it anymore. But it's one of the better ones that Radio Shack used to sell. And I wanted to show how well it worked with this recorder. Sorry about not being able to get it. I'll try to use some mics that you can get. But this was simply to prove that it sounds pretty good using an external microphone. Now let's try engaging the bass roll-off, which we haven't done yet. There are two positions, 100 Hz and 300 Hz. I don't know where they start in the frequency response curve, but nonetheless, that's where they are. I'm now at 100 Hz. This microphone has a lot of bass in it, partly because I'm so close to it with the proximity effect. Let's now go to 300 Hz and see what that sounds like. And this is the Radio Shack microphone at 300 Hz bass roll-off. And this microphone is 2 inches from my mouth, so it's too bad it's not made of chocolate. Let's now go to the internal microphone at 300 and 100 and normal and see what those sound like. And this is the internal microphone, 300 Hz. Now let's switch to 100 Hz and see what that sounds like. And that's exactly what we've done. We're still at 100 Hz bass roll-off, but we have the internal microphone on in mono. And it would probably sound just the same if you were in stereo. Well, let's try that out. It might be different in terms of noise. Let's go to wide 1 with the same setting. Bass roll-off at 100 and internal omnidirectional microphone on. And we're in wide 1, bass rolled off at 100, internal omnidirectional microphone on. Let's go back now to where we were before, bass full, and no internal omnidirectional microphone. And now we're back to where we started. No bass roll off, no central mic, zoom, wide 1. Let's continue. Now I'm using the Sound Professional's in-ear microphones out on my front porch where there's a bit of breeze, but not a whole lot. They have updated these mics
By the way, in case you haven't used these mics before, they fit in your ears, and therefore I sound quite muffled because I'm in the middle of them. They're facing away from my mouth and out toward the side to give you a quasi-binaural, well, actually, these would be more like binaural effect. At any rate, they've updated these, and supposedly they sound much better. I don't think they like the shape of my ears because of the kind of shape your ear has. It will reflect sound differently. Mine are big. The better to hear you with, said the big bad wolf. No, never mind. The birds are singing. It's gotten a little warmer. The dogs are, sounded like it was throwing up, sorry. Where was I? I'm still on auto gain, which is pretty much where I've been throughout this whole podcast, which reminds me, I suppose I should do something on manual, except the limiter doesn't work, and maybe I'll hold off on that until they come up with an update that causes it to work. So how quiet are these mics in a quiet room? And remember, I'm still being muffled. Also, be aware of the fact that I am recording, once again, on low mic attenuation. And if I look at my meters in SoundForge or Sonar or Studio Recorder, I'm somewhere between minus 8, 10, minus 6. So on mid mic sensitivity, I probably would be pegging the limiter a lot. What other kind of noise can I find to record with these? Not much that's binaural. I could fill the sink up with water because I need to wash my hands after playing in the dirt outside a while ago. But this isn't much for stereo unless I turn my head around and you hear this one panel or the other. I guess that's all the water I need. And I wonder what it sounds like being let out. Not all that exciting. I guess I can get my head out of the sink now. The things one goes through to make a podcast.
And this is an Audio-Technica dynamic microphone with a hum in the cable. I better get a new cable one of these days. I'm on high sensitivity because this is a very low-powered mic. Aside from the hum, let's listen to noise. I don't have a windscreen on this, so I can't get as close as I might. I'm about 4 inches away, and this is the sound you get with this microphone. I could go try the Electrovoice RE635, but omnidirectional. More hum in the cable, different sounding microphone. As I said, this is an omnidirectional mic, and I often put a windscreen on it too. I don't happen to have one handy. So we'll do without. So this is the sound of dynamic microphones with this recorder. I'm once again on auto gain. So if I needed to, I could turn this up or down by getting on manual record and doing that. And I am, as I said, on high mic sensitivity. If I want quasi-binaural sound, I use the DPA 4060s. Let me put them on, plug them in, go out on the front porch, see if it's still raining, see how they work on auto gain, and then play a bit with the manual record capabilities. That's what I've done. And once again, as in the case of the in-ear microphones, because I'm in the middle of these mics and they're both pointing away from me, I'm a bit muffled. Not as much with these, I think, as with the in-ear microphones, which actually go into your ears. It is a bit windy out here, so we'll see how these mics do in the wind. I'm on automatic gain, and there's traffic off to the right, some rain, a bird off to the left, and there comes a car. Is it coming down the street? No, it went down the other street. If I go to manual record and go 5 down from the top, I'm at about the same volume I am now. Of course, I don't have a limiter because it doesn't work.
But let's try that and see how close we get. That's what I've done. And to operate the volumes on manual, you simply use the left and right arrows. I'm going to go all the way up. Now I'm on low mic attenuation, so this is not all the way up, but it's all the way up as far as I want to go. And I'm going to count down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. I think I'm at the bottom. I don't remember exactly how many clicks this has. I think 16, but I'm not sure. If you hold it down, you go all the way back to the top. So I go 5 down again. And theoretically, I'm someplace around where I was before in terms of volume, except with manual record instead of auto record. Now I'm in that quiet, echoey room again, and let's listen to noise. Okay, we're entering the strange, weird realm of Neil's recording here. We're going to do something very strange, and that is we're going to record the sound of silverware in Neil's kitchen drawer. Why, you ask, would I want to do that, other than the fact that I can? Well, interestingly enough, if I can find a microphone and a recorder that will take that sound without distorting, you know what? That means I can go record, guess what? Trains. You think silverware is as loud as trains? Well, in many respects, it is. It is very close to the mic. It is a very high metallic sound. It is very hard to record without overloading. So I'm going to go down to about volume 4 up from the bottom, normalize so that you'll hear the sound of the silverware at 0 on the meters, and let's see what we get. From the bottom, now I'm going to normalize. Now, what I've done is raise the volume, and if there were a train going by, it would mask out the hiss. But there is no train, there's only Neil. However, were the train to go off into the distance and you'd hear it fading away, how much hiss would you hear in the background? Because we've brought up the floor noise, as I said, louder than we normally do. Well, what does it sound like when Neil rattles silverware in his kitchen drawer? Does it distort? I'm going to throw knives, not at you, not at me, but into the, whoa, silverware drawer he missed. Now, after I pick the one up off the floor.
Well, I am impressed. I'm very impressed. I didn't think this recorder would do that. I can go record trains with my DPA mics and the Olympus LS7 recorder. How about that? It would be nice if they fixed the limiter and the compressor on the manual record, but if you find the right volume, you can get low enough. Yes, it will be a little more hissy because you are closer to the floor noise, which is a constant sound, but it actually works. Wow. All right, one more set of mics I want to try. Bought these from Sound Professionals, so they are available. They are called the Slimline Audio Technica microphones. I believe they are model 943. That's Audio Technica model. I don't know what the model number at Sound Professionals is, but it would be easy enough for people to find out. They are lapel mics, which have been wired to put in croquis to wear on my glasses, which helps me see. Actually not. But at least they're unobtrusive. People think, oh, there's a blind man with glasses. Wonder why blind men wear glasses. Don't know that he's recording me, though. And they sound a bit on the crisp end, but that's okay, because sometimes you want that.
So now I'm back on my front porch wearing glasses with a microphone, with two microphones actually. I was walking along the other day carrying my cane wearing these glasses, and I heard a lady behind me say, "Look at that man pretending he's blind. Isn't that awful?" Pretending I'm blind. Well, I wish. All right. Well, let's just test these with the auto gain on this recorder. Now, Olympus has set up the auto gain, which works very nicely, actually, with its own microphone. And they've set it to work with that. Let's see, however, if it works with these mics. So let's slam this door. And slam this big door, which rattles the mirror on the wall. Mirror, mirror on the wall. And let's listen to noise. And the floor squeaking. I'm on auto gain, as I said. And so these are the 940s, the Audio-Technica 940s. About the size of a pencil eraser. Maybe a little bit bigger, but not much bigger. They're pretty tiny. I think they cost about $300 for the pair. But that was many years ago.
And the little crinkling sound you heard in addition to the floor noise was Neil's hair getting in the way of the microphones. I get my hair cut this afternoon. This is the Olympus LS7, and I'm going to be comparing it with the Zoom H4n. I tried to hold them back to back, but as I remembered from a previous podcast, anything you get close enough to the H4n causes the offending recorder, not the H4n, to make all kinds of strange noises. So I have to do these separately, which is not quite as scientific. Anyway, this is the Olympus LS7. Let's listen to noise and then switch to the H4n. And this is the Zoom H4n. Same distance from the recorder as I was from the Olympus. Same echoey, reasonably quiet room. And let's see what we think. The microphones on this recorder certainly are more crisp. I'm at 90 degrees on both, so that should be similar. Anyway, let's see what we all think. Before the summation of this podcast, I have one sound I need to play for a friend. If you can guess what this is, and I'm sure you can, well, you'll know. And if you're said person, you will appreciate this. And there you have it. Truth is, it's a garbage disposal. And I used to use it in about every podcast I made because it was so loud, my old one, that it would really test out limiters. You could hear them working. This one is so quiet that it doesn't really do that. But there is someone I know whose name shall be left off the podcast, who likes my garbage disposal. He probably doesn't like the new one as well. Anyway, enough silliness. Oh no, silliness is always good. What else can I do to be silly? A bit of a summation before we close this podcast with a leaf grinder or some such thing off to the left. I'm out on my front porch again. The way they've done the sampling rate and bitrate on this recorder is interesting. You can record at 44.116, 4816, 8224, and 9624, and nothing in between. I don't know why they've left some of those out, but they did. And the floor noise of this recorder is such that I don't know that I would ever need to use 24-bit. Can I tell a difference in the sound between 44.1 and 96? Yeah, when I get to about 82 and 96, I can tell a bit of difference. But then I'm likely going to have to convert down anyway to 44.1. Sound of a car going by. And so I'm not sure that I would be doing a lot with this recorder at higher sampling rates, although they certainly are there. Well, that's about all I think I can do at this point. And if anybody has any questions about other things I've said, please let me know. I will close this podcast with a very interesting recording I made with this recorder a couple nights ago. There was a hailstorm in my neighborhood, little tiny pea-sized hail. I happened to be in my garage. I turned the recorder on. So the last thing you'll hear on this podcast is the hail pounding on the ceiling of the garage. So I hope you've enjoyed our little run-through of this recorder. And as I said, if you have any questions, let me know. Have a nice day, and enjoy the hail.